Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. There's a few more paragraphs left in the chapter 6 structure of breath meditation, Ajahn Jeff, but I thought to take a break from that today and read a Lungpur Cha talk on Anapanasati, which covers many of the themes that Ajahn Jeff has been covering. This is from Food for the Heart, which was the previous collected works of Ajahn Chah before the current collected works of Ajahn Chah came out. And this is chapter 11, A Gift of Dhamma. The parents of monks here at Wat Pa Pong sometimes come to visit their sons. I regret that I have no gifts to offer these visitors. The West already has so many material things. But of Dhamma, there's very little. I've been there, and I've seen for myself that there's so little Dhamma there that leads to peace and tranquility. There are only things that continually make one's mind confused and troubled. The West is already materially prosperous. It has so many things to offer which are sensually enticing: sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and textures. However, people unaware of Dhamma only become confused by them. So today I will offer you some Dhamma to take back home as a gift from Wat Pa Pong and Wat Pa Nanachat. What is Dhamma? Dhamma is that which can cut through our problems and difficulties, gradually reducing them to nothing. That's what is called Dhamma, and that's what should be studied throughout our daily lives, so that when some mental impression arises in us, we'll be able to deal with it. We all have problems, whether we are living here in Thailand or in other countries. If we don't know how to solve them, we'll always be subject to suffering and distress. That which solves problems is wisdom, and to have wisdom, we must develop and train the mind. The subject of practice isn't far away at all. It's right here in our bodies and minds. Westerners and Thais are the same. They both have a body and mind. A confused body and mind means a confused person, and a peaceful body and mind, a peaceful person. Actually, the mind, like rainwater, is pure in its natural state. But if we drop some green coloring into clear rainwater, it turns green. If we drop yellow coloring, it turns yellow. The mind reacts similarly. When a comfortable mental impression drops into the mind is comfortable. When an uncomfortable mental impression does so, the mind is uncomfortable. It becomes tinted, just like the water. When clear water contacts yellow, it turns yellow. When it contacts green, it turns green. It always changes color. Actually, the green or yellow water is naturally clean and clear. This is also the natural state of the mind, clean and pure and unconfused. It becomes confused only because it pursues mental impressions. It gets lost in moods. Let me explain more clearly. Imagine you are sitting in a peaceful forest. If there's no wind, the leaves are still. When a wind arises, they flutter. The mind is similar to a leaf. When it contacts a mental impression, it too trembles and flutters in a way that depends on the nature of that mental impression. And the less we know of Dhamma, the more the mind will continually pursue mental impressions. Feeling happy, it succumbs to happiness. Feeling suffering, it succumbs to suffering. It's constant confusion. In the end, people become neurotic. Why? Because they don't know. They just follow their moods and don't know how to look after their own minds. When the mind has no one to look after it, it's like a child with no mother or father to take care of it. An orphan has no refuge, and because of that, feels very insecure. Likewise, if the mind is not looked after, if there's no training or maturation of character with right understanding, things can get really troublesome. The method of training the mind I want to talk about is called kamatana. Kama means action, and tana means base. In Buddhism, this is the method of making the mind peaceful and tranquil. You use it to train the mind and, once the mind is trained, to investigate the body. Our being is composed of two parts. One is the body, the other the mind. There are only these two parts. What is called the body is that which can be seen with our physical eyes. The mind, on the other hand, has no physical aspect. The mind can only be seen with the internal eye, or the eye of the mind. These two things, body and mind, are in a constant state of turmoil. What is the mind? The mind isn't really any thing. Conventionally speaking, it's that which sees or senses. That which senses, receives, and experiences all mental impressions is called mind. Right at this moment, there is mind. When I speak to you, your mind acknowledges what I say. Sounds enter through your ear, and you know what is being said. That which experiences this is called mind. This mind doesn't have any self or substance. It doesn't have any form. It just experiences mental activities, that's all. If we teach this mind to have right view, the mind won't have any problems. It will be at ease. The mind is the mind. Mental objects are mental objects. Mental objects are not the mind. The mind is not mental objects. In order to clearly understand our minds and the mental objects in our minds, we say that the mind is that which receives the mental objects which pop into it. When these two things, mind and its object, come into contact with each other, they give rise to feelings. Some are good, some bad, some cool, some hot, all kinds. Without wisdom to deal with these feelings, however, the mind will be troubled. Meditation is a way to develop the mind so that it becomes the basis for the arising of wisdom. Here the breath is a physical foundation. We call it anapanasati, or mindfulness of breathing. We make breathing our mental object. We take this object of meditation because it's the simplest and because it has been the heart of meditation since ancient times. When we do sitting meditation, we sit cross-legged, right leg on top of the left leg, right hand on top of the left hand. Keep your back straight and erect. Say to yourself, now I will let go of all my burdens and concerns. You don't want anything that will cause you worry. Let go of all concerns for the time being. Now fix your attention on the breath. Then breathe in and breathe out. In developing awareness of breathing, don't intentionally make the breath long or short. Don't make it strong or weak. Just let it flow normally and naturally. Mindfulness and self-awareness, arising from the mind, will know the in-breath and the out-breath. Be at ease. Don't think about anything. The only thing you have to do is fix your attention on the breathing in and breathing out. You have nothing to do but that. Keep your mindfulness fixed on the in and out breaths as they occur. Be aware of the beginning, middle, and end of each breath. On inhalation, the beginning of the breath is at the nose tip, the middle at the heart, and the end in the abdomen. On exhalation, it's just the reverse. The beginning of the breath is in the abdomen, the middle at the heart, and the end at the nose tip. Focusing the attention on these three points will relieve all worries. Don't think of anything else. Keep your attention on the breath. Perhaps other thoughts will enter the mind and distract you. Don't be concerned. Just take up the breathing again as your object of attention. The mind may get caught up in judging and investigating your moods, but continue to practice, being constantly aware of the beginning, middle, and end of each breath. Eventually, the mind will be aware of the breath at these three points all the time. When you do this practice for some time, the mind and body will get accustomed to the work. Fatigue will disappear. The body will feel lighter, and the breath will become more and more refined. Mindfulness and self-awareness will protect the mind and watch over it. We practice like this until the mind is peaceful and calm, until it is one. One means that the mind is completely absorbed in the breathing, that it doesn't separate from the breath. The mind is unconfused and at ease. It knows the beginning, middle, and end of the breath and remains steadily fixed on it. When the mind is peaceful, we fix our attention on the in-breath and out-breath at the nose tip only. We don't have to follow it down to the abdomen and back up. Just concentrate on the tip of the nose where the breath comes in and goes out. This is called calming the mind, making it relaxed and peaceful. When tranquility arises, the mind stops. It stops with its single object, the breath. This is what's known as making the mind peaceful so that wisdom may arise. This is the beginning, the foundation of our practice. You should try to practice this every single day, wherever you may be, whether at home, in a car, lying, or sitting down. You should be mindfully aware and watch over the mind constantly. This is called mental training and should be practiced in all the four postures, not just sitting, but standing, walking, and lying down as well. The point is that we should know what the state of the mind is at each moment, and to do this, we must be constantly mindful and aware. Is the mind happy or suffering? Is it confused? Is it peaceful? Getting to know the mind in this manner allows it to become tranquil, and when it does become tranquil, wisdom will arise. With the tranquil mind, investigate the meditation subject, the body, from the top of the head down to the soles of the feet, then back up again to the head. Do this over and over. Bring your attention to the hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. In this meditation, we see that this whole body is composed of four elements: earth, water, fire, and air. The hard and solid parts of our body make up the earth element, the liquid and flowing parts, the water element. Winds that pass up and down our body constitute the air element, and the heat in our body, the fire element. Taken together, they compose what we call a human being. When the body is broken down into its component parts, however, only these four elements remain. The Buddha taught that there is no being, per se, no human, no Thai, no Westerner, no person, but that ultimately there is only these four elements. That's all. We assume that there is a person or a being, but in reality there isn't anything of the sort. Whether taken separately as earth, water, fire, and air, or taken together, labeled as a human being, they're all impermanent, subject to suffering, and not self. They're all unstable, uncertain, and in a state of constant change, not stable for a single moment. Our body is unstable, altering and changing constantly. Hair changes, nails change, teeth change, skin changes, everything changes completely. Our mind, too, is always changing. It isn't a self or anything substantial. It isn't really us or them, although it may think so. Maybe it will think about killing itself. Maybe it will think of happiness or of suffering, all sorts of things. It's unstable. If we don't have wisdom and we believe this mind of ours, it'll lie to us continually, and we will alternately suffer and be happy. The mind is an uncertain thing. This body is uncertain. Together they are impermanent. Together they are a source of suffering. Together they are devoid of self. These, the Buddha pointed out, are neither a being, nor a person, nor a self, nor a soul, neither us nor them. They're merely elements. Earth, water, fire, and air. Just elements. When the mind sees this, it will rid itself of the attachments that hold that I am beautiful, I am good, I am evil, I am suffering, I have, I this, or I that. You will experience a state of unity, for you'll have seen that all of humankind is basically the same. There is no I. There are only elements. When you contemplate and see impermanence, suffering, and not self, there will no longer be clinging to a self, a being, an I, a he, or a she. The mind that sees this will give rise to nibbida, or disenchantment and dispassion. It will see all things only as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. The mind then stops. The mind is Dhamma. Greed, hatred, and delusion will then diminish and recede little by little, and finally there is only mind, just the pure mind. This is called practicing meditation. This gift of Dhamma is for you to study and contemplate in your daily lives. It will show you the way to peace of mind. It will render your mind calm and unconfused. Your body may be in turmoil, but your mind will not. Those in the world may be confused, but you will not be. When you are surrounded by confusion, you'll not be confused, because the mind will have seen. The mind is Dhamma. This is the right path, the proper way. That's all for that talk. So if there's any questions, we have about 10 minutes, or if everyone wants to just keep listening to more Lumpur Cha, then that can happen as well.
So often translated as when Lumpur Cha talks about mind and mind objects.
Jitta is mind. Arom kongji. Arom kongji. So it's like the mood of the mind, object of the mind. Arom. There's actually something that Ajahn Mun pointed to, not just Lumpur Cha, but many of the people came to study with him. Because I've seen other monks, great teachers, credit. Ajahn Mun with emphasis and how helpful it was. Certainly Ajahn Chah spoke about that, how that's part of where he felt he was starting to get a handle on meditation, on practice, get a kind of an angle on it that was really helpful, just sort of seeing, taking that perspective of seeing that there's these two aspects of the mind and the objects of mind, and of course we spend our time running after the objects of mind and neglect the mind itself.
Sadhu.